This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, you're listening to Digital Desires on BFM. I'm Vizla Kumarisen. My usual counterpart Fuad Ahmad Rahmat is not available today, but in his stead, we've got the ever trustworthy Chua Eun-taek. Hi, Eun-taek.
Hello, hello. You guys haven't been together on the same show for a while now. It's time to reunite the gang. What's happening?
Yes, it is time to come back together and talk about all things digital and how it affects our lives off screen and how we relate to each other. And fittingly enough, this week we kick off the conversation with emojis. Mm-hmm. So there was a study recently done on how emojis affect the brain. And Eun-taek, do you want to brief us about the study?
Sure. So this study was conducted by a graduate student in linguistics and a former linguistics professor at the same university, University of Illinois, that looked at 106 participants, giving them a sentence to read that ends with an emoji. And then they test the participants on whether or not they are able to detect irony or sarcasm in those sentences. So what they do...
Sorry, the example they gave in the article was the same sentence.
Correct.
The cake she made was really
terrible.
Bad.
Yeah.
The cake she made was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were three versions of that sentence. The first version had the emoji with the downward mouth emoji,
mm-hmm.
which is the frown.
The frown, yeah.
And then the second one, the same sentence, the cake she made was terrible with a smiling emoji. And the third one, the cake she made was terrible with the winking emoji.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I thought it was rather straightforward, but what they did was they also look at the participants' brainwave and what it's doing. And so what they found interesting was that the brainwave that produced the signal shows a sense of reprocessing or reanalyzing or recontextualizing the sentence. And this signal that they call P600 apparently is associated with what happens in your brain when you find grammatical errors or when you find irony and sarcasm in speech. So I thought that was kind of novel. It puts a scientific spin to something that I think to many people would feel straightforward. Did you learn something new from this article? Because I thought it was quite self-evident that a picture, of course, is going to help with clarifying what the text couldn't do.
Yeah. It was interesting because as I was reading it and the article that we are discussing starts with the three sentences with the emojis, and I looked at the sentences and the first thing I thought when I saw the smiling and the winking emojis, I was like, oh my God, so nasty. but then as I was reading the article, I realized what it implied. And What was also quite telling was that for me, why those two combinations sort of elicited a not normal response in me was that there was a bit of dissonance. Like, why would you've just said the cake she made was terrible. Why would there be a smiley face on it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Or why would there be a winky face on it? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me a while to pick up that it was irony. But then again, I might have been a little slow this morning. So that is there as well, you know, where there's this whole idea of cognitive dissonance. So basically, two or more information that you're receiving is very different and sometimes contradicting each other.
Mm.
Of course, you know, we in our conversations we use sarcasm, and so we pick it up as sarcasm, but it can also be very easily misconstrued as something else, right? If the person the she in the sentence actually saw the sentence with the smiling emoji at the end, I wonder what her reaction would be.
Yeah, more context is needed, isn't it? Whether they have a past history, have they been teasing each other about their baking skills or whatnot? So just looking at it without any brief, like, you wouldn't be able to tell which is... what's the meaning behind it, right? Other than the fact that what you said, there's some cognitive dissonance, that there's some double meaning or some play on language.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing that struck me was there are a lot of people who actually don't get verbal just pure verbal irony or sarcasm. And I know people like that. I've met people like that. And you know, sometimes the kind of people you have to like spell out the jokes to.
Right. Yeah. Are you talking about neurotypical people or someone on the spectrum, for example?
Neurotypical.
Right.
So by neurotypical, I mean everyday people who don't actually have a diagnosis of mental illness or any form of intellectual disability.
Mm-hmm.
And they struggle with irony and sarcasm. Mm. And I wondered if I did this experiment with these people I know, what results it would bring. Of course, it will not be a controlled, proper scientific study or anything like that. I wonder if they'd pick up the irony in statements like this. Mm. The emojis are now being used so widely, or at least I use it a lot. I haven't yet reached that peak point of like using emojis instead of actual words to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
But I usually use emojis to accentuate what I'm already trying to say or what I'm feeling and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of other people do as well.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what this article also the question it raised is that do people really see the deeper meaning of emojis?
Mm-hmm.
Or do they just use it as, oh, it's a cute thing?
Mm. Is it really possible for someone to miss irony or sarcasm? What is happening in the brain? Is it comprehension? Is it something from lack of familiarity with language?
I think it's a little bit of lack of familiarity with language. And also sometimes people, I don't know if it's a way their brains work or the way they think. They're very literal. So if you tell them something, they're going to believe it literally. And of course, sometimes, you know, it's the way you deliver. Sometimes irony, sarcasm is delivered with a particular intonation, with particular stresses in particular points of the sentence or what you're talking about. And some people are not very sensitive to that aspect of communication, right? It's a bit of a quote-unquote refined way of communicating.
Correct, yeah. Yeah, it's almost a higher level of communicating, isn't it? Because if you're not familiar with a certain language, you can be ironic.
Correct. You know, I'm thinking about, for example, in Basamnesia,
mm-hmm.
This is what I experienced in school, when your teacher was angry with you about something and she didn't want you to do something, it was Basa Terbalik, right?
Reverse psychology?
Not reverse psychology. So she didn't want you to go out in the field and play. She would say, go and play. What do I care? Right? You know, in Basa Malaysia. And you would have to be quite familiar with things like, you have to note things like her facial expression as she's saying it,
right. Her
tone of voice. Like, why is she saying that? Like, isn't it good to go and play outside? But no, it's raining. So is that what she's saying? Is that what she's implying? So there are these multiple levels of multiple layers in the delivery and the context of that sentence for you to decipher. And then if you are properly adept, you would go and sit down quietly and not go outside and play. You'll get the message.
Yeah.
But if you're totally clueless, then you would be going out to play, and that would mean that you would be in trouble.
Yeah, and that's a training ground for that particular student's future relationships, isn't it? Whether it's textual or in person, what one person says is not always what that person means. But coming back to what you said about emojis of whether it is just an enhancer to make a point, or is it a tool in it itself, right? That it's a language in itself. I don't think it's possible to communicate entirely just with emojis. It's almost impossible. Beyond basic instructions or signs, do you think emoji would go into, you know, formal language or, you know, business writing to enliven it a little bit, make it less distant and cold and more familiar and intimate?
Right. So I think there are different levels of language even, right? Like, you know, there are academic journals, there's stuff that you'd print in the newspapers, and then there's stuff that we would send to each other on our phones. And language only works because there is a shared meaning around what symbols mean, right? How do we know A is A? How do we know Z is Z, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also following certain rules around how those symbols are used, correct? So I could send an entire sentence in emojis, but its effectiveness would depend on the person I'm sending it to having a shared meaning of that string of emojis, right? We've seen emojis being used for things like coded language, things like sending invites for a party that adults are not supposed to know about,
right.
Or you know, having conversations, but you don't want somebody else who's looking in to understand what it means. So you know, we know that emojis have been used for that. So it is possible to communicate in a complete sentence. But coming back to your question, what I was thinking about when I was reading the article is that unless you're an exceptionally skilled writer, it's completely impossible to communicate fully with words also.
Yes. You need language. It's shared science, yeah.
Yes, correct. And not only a science, but it's just sheer ability. Mm-hmm. I don't know, think about writers who use powerful imagery or who are able to evoke certain emotions in you. Mm-hmm. I can't write like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And I would use emojis to help me sort of communicate that level of what I'm feeling to somebody else. If I say I'm sad, period, and I send it, versus I'm sad with emoji of, you know, crying waterfalls, it conveys very different things about how I'm feeling, my level of sadness. I can't do that just by writing words.
Yeah. So in the history of language, right, we started off with spoken and sign language first. That was first developed, and then only comes the written part. Text is a relatively recent invention. Because that writing comes after spoken and sign language, does that mean written communication is a higher, more evolved form, sophisticated form of language? And if that's the case, is emoji a further evolution of that? Or, you know, like most naysayers of emoji would say, it is the destruction of language?
I don't know much about language to qualify whether or not written language is a higher form of language. But I have seen arguments that the use of emoji is actually a natural part of the evolution of language. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, English as we know it today is not in English in its pure form, right? It's a combination of Latin and French and German and a whole bunch of other Persian and a whole bunch of other things. So it started off as one thing, and now it's what we are familiar with. We cannot expect it to stay that way. It will evolve. And how it evolves, we don't know. And of course, technology has intervened, and it's now aiding and abetting this evolution. And of course, like the emoji naysayers, as you say, might see it as a very detrimental effect on language. But I think other people are looking at it quite fascinated, you know, in quite a fascinated way, and are quite interested to see in what directions language evolves in.
Really? What are the potential ways it could evolve beyond better graphics and more variations?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's something we can explore further. And we can do that when we come back from the break.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Digital Desires on BFM 89.9. I'm Vizsla Kumarisen, sitting in today with Chua Untech. And we'll be back after the break. BFM 89.9, I'm Vizsla Kumarisen, sitting in today with Chua Untech. And we are discussing emojis and how our brains process emojis. We're referring to a study conducted by linguists in the University of Illinois, who found that people process emojis in the same way that they process irony and sarcasm.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about, before the break, we were talking about the influence of emojis on the evolution of language and whether or not it's going to have a positive effect or it's going to have a negative effect. I don't know. I'm finding it hard to quantify that because who can tell what's positive and what's negative? I'm just thinking back to, you know, the early inventors of the English language.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sitting they're sitting down and lamenting over the influence that the other languages were having on English and cursing the fact that it was happening and being unhappy about it. But look at English now. I mean, that's just one example. So I suppose if you're a purist, you're going to think of it quite negatively. But if you are interested in seeing really how language can not just evolve but expand and its value in its ability to share meaning with different people and to acquire new aspects to itself, I think it's quite fascinating to see.
Yeah, one of the reasons why English is such a bastardized language is because they keep absorbing words from foreign language, which there's no, I suppose, native or words in English that can describe those things. And
we're seeing this now with Bahasa Malaysia, right?
Yes, yes, that's true. And one of the, I guess, emoticons, even before emojis, that was used to describe an emotions that I think till this day people are not able to accurately use words to describe is the one where it's a colon with a forward slash. You know, you're just like,
oh, yes.
Yeah. You know, what is that? And many have said it's a skeptical. Some have said that it's a, maybe even
it's a sneer,
disbelieving, a smirk.
Smirk. It could be any number of things, right?
Correct. Yeah, that many, many interpretations. So, yeah, this comes to a point. Or there are two things I wanted to say about what you mentioned earlier about how language is only as good as what we share in terms of the
meaning
and the signs and whatnot. So one is technical, right? So I just found out while preparing for this show that there was a Unicode consortium, that a nonprofit that was set up because there of all these different platforms that existed, and coders were coding their emojis specifically for their platform. But when an Android will talk to an iOS, for example, in the past, it will not appear as intended by the sender with the recipient if they are using different gadgets because they were coded differently. So this consortium was created, and so all the signs have to go through, I guess, the same code. I'm really sorry if I'm mangling the explanation of this, but that is the gist of what this is. It's a very technical reason for its existence, so that all the devices can interpret or send and receive emojis on the same.
Well, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I remember reading when I was younger because you know, I'm quite fascinated by space travel and things like that. And I was very excitedly looking forward to this
alien encounters.
Not alien encounters, but they were sending one of the first Mars rovers.
Right.
And a huge technical difficulty, which they realized very late in the process, was that there was a cooperation between French astronauts and American astronauts. The basic thing that the Americans were communicating in yards, and I don't know that system, so it was like, you know, and the French were communicating and calculating in the international system using centimeters, meters, and what we are familiar with in Malaysia, and a simple thing like that, you know, quote unquote, that simple, right, was causing huge problems and billions of dollars, right, and it was you need to have an agreed way of communicating, an agreement on what language is and what language to use and how to utilize that in order for it to have the most effectiveness in your everyday life.
Yeah.
And then coming back to this study, I'm also wondering if it is possible, because if you see how emojis are so useful in communicating, is it possible to effectively communicate without signs and symbols? I'm talking about like hand movements. Like even as I'm talking now, my hands are waving wildly, or you know, your eyebrows are raised, or your eyes go a little wider, or your mouth goes up or down, or your nose twitches, or any of those things. Tiny things sometimes we don't even notice. Are they just as important as the words we're saying?
I think no one is more important than the other. It's called the multimodal communication, isn't it? Like an emoji enhances the text, or it is to text what gesture and tones are to speech and speaking. But for emojis, right, I think even sometimes the meaning is not the same across different cultures, or sometimes the translation of what it means can differ as well. I personally find the two hands being together, the claps together emoji, confusing. I think most people use it as a sign of thanks, right? But
I don't know what it means.
You know what it means?
I don't know what it means.
Because if you type thank you or thanks on your phone, that is is a shortcut for that symbol. But it could just as well mean as praying.
Yeah, praying in our culture.
Correct, correct. Mm. So I guess this is something that the study did not address.
Mm.
But one of the future areas to explore, as you alluded to earlier.
Yeah. But I think that also depends on who you use it with. So I'm a bit of a stickler. So if it's someone I don't know very well, I try and avoid using emojis unless it is the very basic smiley ones. And if it's people I know a little more and I know that they understand the way I communicate, then I am more adventurous in my choice of emojis in my communication with them. So in I have the same problems with you with the palms together symbol. I don't know how that means thank you. But I will use it when it's usually in WhatsApp chat groups. I never use it in like one-on-one communication. When somebody says, a family member of mine is in the hospital, please pray for me. And I would send that. Right. And it's widely accepted.
Right?
So I think it also depends on you going with your instinct of what works and what doesn't work. And that also requires a certain level of sophistication in your ability to socialize with people and to read cues and to read people's expressions and to understand how it's used. No one teaches you these things. So it's a matter of you going out there and learning by observation, learning by trial and error, which in a social setting can be quite traumatizing, right? But it's still necessary in order for you to understand what is appropriate when.
Yeah. All the more so when now chat groups can contain up to hundreds of people. I think that really speeds up the learning process in terms of what emoji means, what... I don't know. What you said, it is something that you use only with people that you are familiar with. Yeah, you would not use this, I suppose, with someone who you just met or you're trying to impress or in a job interview. What does it say about, I don't know, our psychology in using this, that we are using emojis as a means to not supposed to be taken so seriously? I don't know. That's the way I use emoji as well. And I don't have further thoughts about it and how it can go further beyond what the study said.
So in that sense, the emoji becomes a tool to your communication, right? You making a silly, using a silly emoji is supposed to imply that your persona on this WhatsApp chat group or in that particular communication is one that's not serious, correct? But, you know, there is also sometimes you need, for me, again, like I said, I'm a stickler and I tend to err on the side of formality first until we've established a little bit more rapport. And then I can sort of move into the emoji sort of arena and communicating, right?
It can be a brutal place, right? Because if you act out of the realms of accepted codes or etiquette and emojis, it's very easy to be seen as or be perceived as weird or making too forward a gesture.
Or not being serious enough.
Yeah.
Right? I think workplace chat groups are very strange for that. You know, is it more for formal communication? Is it for silly communication? And it's different when you already knew the rules when you enter the WhatsApp group. But it's a completely different ballpark when you find yourself in a WhatsApp group, whether you had a choice in it or not. And then you're going to have to navigate the rules yourself.
Right.
And I think this is even more important for you to develop that sensitivity in looking at how people communicate and learning that and then sticking to the script and understanding what kind of repercussions there might be if you deviate from that script.
Do you find the pressure to conform and someone is very effusive in their emoji giving?
No.
No.
Or I send the kind of, the grim-faced emoji or the gun emoji or something, you know, to imply stop it.
Really?
Oh. I've never had to use that, but right. You mentioned that, I'm just thinking of my strategy.
Right. I would just reply with text, but on the whole, I think I would be more... I would reciprocate, I think, a little bit, just to not leave the person out there hanging.
Yeah. So again, these things, aside from the rules, are also determined by how we navigate our social worlds as well. You know, whether or not you are okay possibly making somebody uncomfortable, or, you know, we conform because we want to fit in. Do you feel that pressure to fit in? Do you feel okay, like, not fitting in? Mm. Or do you feel a strong pressure to fit in? Are you okay with, like, being known as the grumpy one in the group? So all these things also determine how we use emojis and how we read emojis and how we, in turn, sort of use that in our everyday communication.
Yeah. 3 months ago, you did a show on World Emoji Day.
Oh, yes, with Samuel. And
yeah. What do you think about this development in light of what you discussed that time?
Yeah, I think, you know, at that point when we talked about World Emoji Day, before we talked about it, we were all sort of slightly scoffing at it.
Correct. Yeah, that was the tone, I think.
That was the tone. But, you know, we really explored the usefulness of emoji during the show. And for me, this study just shows that it's a lot more complex than we think it is, right? A smiley face is not just a smiley face,
mm-hmm.
right? It's a whole lot more. I'm thinking also about when we did the show on memes, but how we just think it's a funny cartoon, but it means so much more. And that is the power of these little 2D images where you can have, it's not just that, it's also, emblematic of the social structures in society, power, social relations, gender relations, and a whole bunch of other things are all embedded on this little image, round image.
Right, yeah.
With, you know, two dots for an eye.
It's more than that now. It's
exactly. That, yeah. It's so much more.
Yeah, and at last count, there are more than 700 of them, and the number would only increase.
Mm. I believe, I'm not an Apple user, but apparently the new phones the upgrade has got a whole bunch of new emojis as well.
Correct. That the older models would not be able to decipher or decode if they don't have the latest operating system.
Yes, and of course, this is just one way for, you know, phone companies to get people to upgrade their phones and buy new phones.
Yes.
But it's also an interesting way in which the use of context and language and meaning is being imbued into language.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, so it's still early days on whether or not emojis are reshaping our brains or, you know, altering the way we perceive
everything reshapes
language.
Our brains. Everything reshapes our brains. The electric light reshapes our brains. Why are we a little bit more harsh on emojis than we are on electric lights?
I think it's because, one, we can do without, or rather people think that we can do without.
I was just going to say that now that I have emojis, I don't think I can do without them.
Really?
I'm kidding. But, you know, they add so much more context to textual communication.
Right. On that note, I guess we agree.
Perhaps we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, you know, today we talked about emojis and how emojis are shaping our brains and how our brains are in turn responding to these emojis. A very fascinating study, which we will put up on our Facebook page if you're interested to read more about. And to wrap things up, if you have any comments on our show, you know, please drop us a line. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at thebiggerpicture@bfm.my, or you can drop us a comment on our Facebook page. Just look for Digital Design flyers on the search tool at the top of the page. I am on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Visla Kumarisen, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Join us again in 2 weeks' time, where Fuad Rahmat will join me and we will explore another topic where we look at how screens are shaping our lives and our social interactions. Until then, this is Visla Kumarisen and
I'm Chuan Tik.
Signing off, Digital Desires at BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.